You're listening to the Student Leadership Programme podcast.
Hello, everybody. My name is Claire, and I'm here today to talk with one of my good friends. Some of you may know her from Twitter. Her name is Jessica Sainsbury. Hi, Jess.
Hello, my name is Jess Sainsbury. As you've already said, I feel like I'm infiltrating this 150 leaders crew right now, but glad to be here.
So I was on the first cohort of 150 leaders, and those of you that are listening to the series of podcasts, you will have heard Leanne's fantastic interview, and I was in the same group as Leanne. So I was in that first group, and I'm going to talk a little bit about my experiences, but I'll just explain that you didn't do the program, did you?
No, I didn't. I did apply,
but
though.
Did you? I never knew that. Exciting times. The rejection of Jessica. I'm glad I wasn't around at that time. She doesn't deal with it well. I'm going to talk about a little bit about why I applied, but the reason Jess and I are talking together is we've shared a lot of kind of similar experiences after the 150 leaders. And so I'm going to talk about how I met Jess, but also we both came to nursing after previous careers and both have families, and both possibly would admit to being slightly ambitious. So we're going to talk a little bit about being ambitious in nursing and as women, I guess, which is also an important thing. So that's why I suggested Jess coming on to talk with me. So for me, I applied to the 150 Leaders Programme really quickly after I started uni. About 2 months, I think, I had an email from my course tutor saying you should apply for this. And I read the programme and I was really excited by what it had to offer. But I think throughout the first part of the programme, I felt a bit of an imposter. And some of that is because I did start uni as a mature student. I was in my 40s when I started. I have 4 kids and was really busy, but I'd had a previous career. And I knew that I was coming to nursing to do something different, to be with patients, to be a mental health nurse. And I still hold this true. I don't want to move into management. I was already in management before I became a nurse. And so I didn't want to just move into management and lose that clinical contact. And I think what the leadership program does and what attracted me to it, but I then had to get straight in my head, was really set me on that journey of leadership rather than management. They can go hand in hand, but they are two very separate things. And I really struggled with that personally. And it's still an internal battle I have sometimes about, am I actually a leader? But it did shape my career. And for me, one of the biggest things the programme gave, I mean, Leanne gave a really good overview in hers of what we did in that first cohort, so I won't repeat that, including the glass box that we all stood in. But one of the biggest things that I got involved in from 150 leaders alongside the main programme and the mentoring was Twitter. So throughout the time that we were there, we were encouraged to tweet. I had a Twitter account that I'd probably set up maybe 10 years before, and I didn't really use it. I occasionally looked for things around special needs parenting because I have 2 kids with additional needs. But other than that, maybe a bit about girl guiding because I'm a guide leader. Other than that, I hadn't really used it. And 150 leaders really ignited the use of Twitter for me. I followed all the speakers. I followed all the other people that were in the program. We were really encouraged to use it. And one of the first people I linked in with was Jess.
Was it?
Yeah, through the Student Nurse Project.
Oh, of course. There we go. Way back when?
Way back when. So it was early on in Student Nurse Project days. So I followed the Student Nurse Project. Jess at the time was a curator on the Student Nurse Project and was leading it. Along with a few other people, and I applied to take on a role with the Student Nurse Project, and Jess interviewed me.
It's so weird to think back, because I can remember your expression of interest at the time, but it feels like a completely different person and scenario compared to, you know, how we are now as really good friends. But yeah,
yeah.
Can you imagine if we hadn't have both been on Twitter at the same time and met?
It's weird because Jess is now one of my best friends, but literally, you know, I can, and having thinking about this for this podcast, actually, if I hadn't gone on 150 leaders, we didn't do digital literacy in my course. We didn't really learn much about social media. It was 150 leaders that led me to Twitter. And if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have had all the experiences that I'd had through university. I wouldn't have met you. And I don't think I'd have had as rich a career to date as I have now, because a lot of the stuff that I do and the networks I have are as a result of that. So for me, the first thing I applied to do after the 150 Leaders Project was the Student Nurse Project. And I think that's the other thing that 150 Leaders gave me, was the confidence that I could do extra things, that I could put my hands up and say, actually, I can manage this. And I think Leanne spoke really well about that on her podcast about, you know, people quite often say, oh, how do you balance having a family and doing all this extra stuff? And for me, it's a hobby and a passion and something I'm interested in, so it doesn't always feel like it's too much work.
Do you ever feel like it can be used as a bit of an accusation though sometimes, like, how can you possibly fit all of that in? You're a mother, shouldn't you be focusing on that?
Yeah, definitely. And that comes down to that ambition thing, doesn't it? Because when I was younger, even up till, you know, fairly recently, I don't think I would ever have described myself as ambitious. Ambition to me felt like quite a negative word if I said it about myself. I don't think I would ever have described somebody as ambitious and felt that I was necessarily being negative about them. And I, you know, I've been a Girl Guide leader for 28 years, I think, and I would always tell the kids that I work with, be ambitious, be brave, be bold, reach for the stars, you know, do whatever you want to do. Just do whatever you do well. But I'd never have said that about myself. I am ambitious. I would have felt that that was quite, I don't know, negative. Like, I would have thought people would have judged me for saying that, I think.
Or think you're a bit kind of full of yourself as well. That's like, we've spoken about ambition quite a lot between us, haven't we? And I think it's taken us both a while to think that actually ambition is a really, really good thing and we should be embracing it and encouraging others to be the same. Like, don't use the word as a weapon against others. It's actually really good. Like, you wouldn't be having this conversation necessarily with a man about their ambition. So why is that the same with us?
Exactly. You don't see negative things or hear negative things about men who say they're ambitious. And I think the other thing I had to feel okay within myself so that I can be okay when I speak to other people is that ambitious doesn't mean I always want to be in charge and the boss. And, you know, that's one of the things that I think surprises people about me and probably about you as well. So we both had a period of time where we led the Student Nurse Project.
We've
both stood down from that. I was also the chair of the RCN Newly Qualified Network, which you're now the co-chair of. And we both know when our time comes to hand things over and don't keep hold of things. So ambition doesn't mean that we always have to be
in charge,
the leader.
No.
Yeah.
And that's been really important though, hasn't it? Like, it's always been, we've been quite conscious about, and we've had conversations around, you know, is now the time to move on? And not because we're looking for the next thing all of the time. It's just, we've had such good opportunities that we've grabbed hold of. So it's about making sure other people can do that as well. And yeah, it's just, you can't hold on to things for too long, even though you might be absolutely loving it.
Yeah, there's a time when it comes, and also looking at those next opportunities for ourselves and for other people. And one of the great things for me is when I look at the Student Nurse Project, we were talking about the Student Nurse Project the other night, weren't we? Do we worry about it continuing? You know, and it's going from strength to strength. And I really like that we stepped away and other people took over, and it's the authentic voice of students, which is really great.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of those things. But I had so many opportunities. I mean, I think my mentor, when I met my mentor, who was part of Manchester Metropolitan University, and I met her in a Starbucks on a rainy day, was the first time I met her. And one of the things that she really inspired in me was that I don't have to rush forward and know the answers to everything, and to, you know, look at lots of different opportunities. And that was really important, because I think it meant so much to me to come into nursing. And I've told my story lots of times, you know, there's lots of places you can read about why nursing was so important to me, but it was so important. I gave up quite a lot, and I put, you know, made the decision that as the main breadwinner, I was going back to university. So I didn't want to fail at it. And I think I felt that I therefore had to have a solid plan, and I needed to know exactly where I was going to be and where I was going to be working. And that actually I have become much more chilled out about that and looking at opportunities as they present myself. And I am much better at saying no to things. It might not appear that I'm very good at saying no to things, but I have been able to know when opportunities are right or wrong, and look at them for what they're worth. And that's been a real learning experience for me.
Yeah, when it's good for you as well. And you say that about saying no to things, and that's something that I think I've probably struggled with as well, just as much. We're getting there now, and it's about what is important. What are those things? You know, I did a teaching session with some second year student nurses this week. It was kind of a follow on from a digital literacy session I did with them right at the start of their course. And now it was about, you know, networking. But one of the best pieces of advice I got as a student from one of the academics actually at my uni was, you need to figure out what it is that you are most passionate about. What is your niche, and focus on those. Stop spreading yourself too thin. You're the kind of person that opportunities will be chucked at you, but you don't have to say yes to everything. Go with the flow by all means, but say yes to things that will give you joy and are part of your true authentic self and what you want to achieve. Don't just do it because you think it will be good for others and everyone else. Like, sometimes be a bit selfish and by saying no. So I was trying to kind of get that across to them in their teaching session. Hopefully they enjoyed it and got what I was trying to say.
And we talk about that a lot, don't we, with each other, about opportunities or decisions that we've made, and with some other, you know, key people that we, you know, Craig Davis and somebody that we both are quite close to. And I do a podcast with Craig, which is just such a passion project for me, about the voices of nurses and stories. But we do talk about having those people. Sometimes it's not within ourselves, and you do need to go and speak to other people. And so you and I and Craig and all the other people that we network with will say, are you sure this is right for you? Didn't you say this? And developing that. And we talk all the time about finding your people. Yeah. And again, like, Twitter is for me the place where I found a lot of those people through those opportunities. You know, it was how I ended up getting involved in the RCN with you, and obviously Kelly, who was part of that first cohort, was on the committee at the same time. And you do find that you meet those people that have the same kind of ideas as you. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. I think it's really common, and this was a really common theme that came out of the 150 leaders group, and I think you and I found it with Student Nurse Project and RCN as well, that not every student wants to do that, and no, that you aren't necessarily in your own cohort going to find somebody who is ambitious and wants the same ideas and wants to change things. And I think it was really good to be able to connect with them, and the 150 leaders program has definitely gone a long way to giving those types of students somewhere to come and speak to each other, and that's been really positive for the whole kind of student experience.
It's so important though, isn't it, to have definitely people who are, and it's not about creating an echo chamber or anything like that. It's more about you know, knowing more people who have the same drive and ambition as you. They might not be passionate about the same things, but they, you know, they've got that going behind them. And don't get me wrong, you know, my lovely little unit group at uni were fab, and some of them will be friends for life. But sometimes I was just like, why aren't you doing all of these things at first? Why, you know, look at this opportunity, go for it. And they were like, no, I'm all right, thanks. And I was like, why not? This is the only time we're going to be students. Come on, guys. But I learned, I went to China. Did find my other people. Yeah.
I went to China as part of my degree, and literally nobody else in my mental health group of student nurses applied, and I was like, apply, you know. Even the same with the 150 leaders opportunity, I would always tell everybody, and other people didn't want to do it, and at first it did frustrate me, and then I had, you know, I had to realize that's my choice to do it, and it's also equally their choice not to. So you know, all of that is amazing, and I think, you know, you and I are very different in what we're passionate about in a lot of ways. You know, we are, our careers are not going to follow the same
path.
I think that's really clear. But that doesn't mean we can't offer each other experiences and challenges and support each other. Actually, it's quite good in a way that we're interested in different things. So we're both doing masters at the moment.
Because we're both.
I did not do what Leanne did and do it in a year. I every time I hear her say that, I think, I'm doing mine over 3 years, you're doing yours over two, aren't you?
Over two, yeah. No, I do, hats off to Leanne, because I honestly, doing it over 2 years while working full time is just, it's worth it, don't get me wrong, and I am enjoying it, but it's, if I could have told myself 6 months ago, maybe I wouldn't have made the same decision, but that it is what it is.
And actually, and you would have though, because Leanne would have told you, and we can all listen to what Leanne said, and we'd have all been like, yeah.
This is what I'm doing.
I'm doing my, yours, yeah. Our masters are very different. So mine is in perinatal mental health, and I love every single second of it. I don't actually work specifically in perinatal mental health, but I love working with women and families, and that's definitely a direction I want to head. But yours is totally different.
Yeah, so mine's in global health with health professions education as a specialist pathway, and I'm so glad I, you know, chose that as an option, because I chose global health because towards the end of my course I was starting to enjoy, you know, those kind of areas, but I knew that education was probably the route of nursing that I wanted to follow, but not necessarily, you know, ending up being a lecturer or anything like that. I enjoy it, but I kind of thought, right, let's get some more experience, exposure to other professions and people while I can. And it was a bit of a selfish decision as well, because I thought if I left it a bit longer, I didn't want, and this isn't a reflection on my workplace at all, but just because of my previous HR career, I didn't want anyone else telling me what I should do as a master's, and I just wanted to go for something that I would enjoy. Do you know what I mean? Which is why I thought, if I do it now, nobody else apart from maybe my husband has a say in it. He likes to think he has a say in it, but
oh, poor Tony. I know, I've picked mine for similar but very different reasons, I suppose, in that I've always had an interest in perinatal mental health. It's always been, you know, right all the way through my degree, it's been something I've been passionate about. I tweet about it. And I know that I want to work with families. I know that early intervention for mental health for me is a passion. I don't really know what that looks like. Whether it will be in a perinatal specialist role or doing some kind of family therapy, I'm not sure. I have things that I know I want to do. So again, my mentor was the first person that ever mentioned the role of nurse consultant to me. I'd not heard of the role nurse consultant. And because I was a bit kind of like, but I want to do everything. Mm-hmm. I love everything. How do I do everything but not burn myself out? And nurse consultant does feel for me like you get to do a little bit of all the stuff that I love. So I never thought I'd love academia, never thought I'd enjoy studying. It was a necessary evil to get another degree to be a nurse, but oh, I love it. And I am loving my master's. So I can, you know, and I can see a possible PhD in my future.
I was going to say, yeah, out of the two of us, it's definitely going to be you that ends up with the doc title.
I don't know. I just, but you know, like even when I hear myself say that, I'm like, my sister was the clever one, not me. But I love it. But I also love clinical, working with patients. I would never, ever want to lose that aspect of my role. And I think we, you know, following COVID, we're in a really challenging position still, both in physical and mental health settings. Yeah. But I think following whatever, however this sort of, we come out of this and it ends, I hope that there'll be like a new dawn and a new way of looking at things, and we will value our health so much more. And I think that's really exciting to be part of. So for me, that's really important. And doing my podcast with Craig is something that I really also want to continue, because I think that documents that. I think that allows us to reflect on it and invite lots of other people on to talk about their experiences.
It's so special, honestly. I love your podcast because it's, you know, it does, and I don't want it to be like Vom Central here, you know, I don't like being overly nice to you, but
ever.
It's just such, it's inspiring, I guess is probably one of the best words to describe it, but it just connects you to people, like not only you guys, I love hearing your guys' accents, I've always said that, but just connecting to other people that I've met via Twitter and things like that, and it's just such a nice thing to have on the car on the way to work.
We love
and I think
it.
You know,
we
maybe in 30 years time listening back, I think that'll be really
let's not talk about how old I'll be then. Let's not talk about how old I'm gonna be, because that's scary. I'll have well retired by then.
I
think it was really interesting for me, because overtly I felt that maybe 150 leaders had been really interesting, a great experience. I'd done a lot of stuff after it, but I found it maybe slightly harder than some people to quantify the impact that the program had had on me, because it wasn't necessarily direct opportunities that came from that event. And actually sitting down and thinking about it, it gave me everything, because it gave me Twitter, it gave me the confidence to say I'm still in touch with some of the speakers, some of the bravery. That was definitely something that came out of the program, you know. And so I would say, you know, if anybody's listening to this that hasn't applied, apply. And if you are no longer a student and you're a nurse or another healthcare kind of practitioner, then just take opportunities that feel right for you and don't feel pressured to do them, and be ambitious. Do what we all tell our children to do. Definitely.
How do I follow that? My advice would be put everything into that application. As someone who probably didn't put in enough effort to the application, and I probably should have, you know, it is really important, and it's a really good exercise. So a program that I've recently started as a newly registered nurse is a Florence Nightingale Foundation program, and I put a heck of a lot of effort into that application, and it wasn't just you know, the process itself, it was giving me the opportunity to reflect and acknowledge what I had done as a student and all of those things that at the time you think, oh, this is just a little thing. It isn't a little thing. You are going above and beyond, you are doing something additional, you are having an impact. So yeah, I guess my advice for this process for anyone would be enjoy putting in an application and shout about your successes, because it's so important, really important.
And fun fact, I applied for that program and didn't get on it. So, slightly different one, but another one. So we take your successes and failures, because there's always something else, isn't there?
Thank you for listening to the Student Leadership Program podcast. For more information, visit www.councilofdeans.org.uk/studentleadership.